Hey, everybody. Welcome to Season 4 of Degish America Presents. I'm Ben Harl, host of the podcast, and I'm happy to have the opportunity to talk to you about this industry that I work in. Now, last season, we introduced you to a lot of the most common stored product pests we encounter in our industry. We talked about different methods of identification and control and discussed pheromone monitoring and inspection. If you haven't had a chance yet, please go back and give Season 3 a listen. I think you'll find a whole bunch of very beneficial information there. In Season 4, we're going to go over the different steps involved in the actual process of fumigation. We'll cover everything from inspecting and bidding the job, prepping the facility, introducing the fumigant, and finally, aeration and deactivation of the fumigant. Now to start, let's dive into some of the preparation and planning that goes into a fumigation, including the types of fumigants available, how to inspect a facility with fumigation in mind, and then a little bit on the bidding process. And to help us today, we've invited Bob Warren to join us. So please help me welcome Bob to the podcast. Bob, how are you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing good, Ben, and yourself?
I'm doing terrific. Fresh off of a vacation, so not doing too bad today.
That's good.
Yeah. Hey, so I know you've been on pretty much every season we've had so far. We've had you come in and kind of talk about a wide variety of topics. But in case somebody hasn't had an opportunity to hear about who you are, could you just do me a favor, kind of tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I've I guess officially started my 33 years in the industry. I had some experience in sanitation / fumigation back when I started in college, and but officially started my 33rd year in the fumigation pest control industry this year. I've worked at several fumigation companies in the past, and have done everything from sanitation audits to fumigation to sales to, at one time, worked for the world's largest pest control provider, was fumigation manager for North and Central America, where I did training all over those areas, as well as writing policy and SOPs for the safe and effective use of all fumigants. It's been a good ride. Can't complain. Still kicking. So I guess I'm doing something right.
Yeah. Yeah. 33 years, man. That's quite a long time in the industry. But I have to say, that's one thing that I really do like about this industry. It seems like we have a lot of people who stay in this industry for a very long time. You know, most people, once they get into this industry, they're in this industry for, you know, for the rest of their careers. So I must say something good about it. You know, I know it's treated me right. Apparently it's treated you right. And I think it treats most everybody else right too. So it's a really, really good industry to kind of fall into.
Yeah, I always tell people that you never see any dumb old fumigators promote them, they get fired, or they unfortunately kill themselves.
Yeah.
I guess I'm doing something right, still around.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So you know, let's jump in here and talk a little bit about you know, some of the different ways that we plan and prepare for fumigations. Just to start off, I wanted to kind of ask you, what the most common types of fumigants are that are used in the United States.
Well, you know, we have several. You know, before, back in the early 90s when I started in the industry, we had methyl bromide, and we still do. Methyl bromide was phased out for, I'll say, regular use in the late 90s, early 2000s. It was starting to be phased out because it was identified as a potential ozone depleter. So we used to use methyl bromide, I'll say, exclusively in the food industry, especially in large flour mills, warehouses, bakeries, and stuff like that, as a space fumigant. And as that was phased out, methyl bromide is still around, still used in soil fumigations, quarantine work, stuff along those lines. It's still got an application, but it's not used as a general fumigant. When that was happening, at the time, Dow had the fumigant sulfuric fluoride brand name Viking, and had used that as a structural fumigant for termites, bed bugs, since I think the early 60s. And then when methyl bromide was being phased out, Dow came forward and got a food label, obtained a food label for sulfuric fluoride under the brand name Profume. So that sort of, in many respects, I won't say replace methyl bromide, but it pretty much did as a structural fumigant. So you had the sulfuric fluoride, Vicane for structures, termites and such, and then the Profume food label, for sulfuric fluoride. And then you've had, solid fumigants, phosphine, aluminum and magnesium phosphide for many, many years as a commodity and in some respects, a space fumigant. And then Solvay, came forward with cylinderized phosphine, and you've got Eco2, which is 2% phosphine and 98% CO2. And also you have VaporPhos, which is 100% phosphine. That takes a special piece of equipment to apply it, because at 18,000 ppm, phosphine will become spontaneously ignite. So you have to have a special piece of equipment to dispense the VaporPhos. So you have methyl bromide still being used. You got sulfuric fluoride. Again, a couple of different brand or a couple of different brand names on that, the Vicane and the Profume. And then you've got solid fumigant, tablets, pellets, pre-pack, fumicells, which is all made by Dagish. And now you've got also for several years, CO2. CO2 is used as an organic fumigant. It has a niche market. It's very, very hard to hold, but it is the only quote unquote organic labeled fumigant for the organic products that are out there today. So you've got methyl bromide, phosphine in solid and cylinderized form, sulfuric fluoride, and CO2. Those are pretty much all of your fumigants in a nutshell.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. I know that there's several fumigants that are being tested currently. I mean, there's a wide variety of things that people are working on to try to introduce some new fumigants into the industry, but I don't think anything else is really widespread yet. I know we here at Dagish, we're working on our own cylinderized phosphine product that's going to be launched very, very quickly. So we'll have, there'll be another cylinderized fumigant brand that'll be available to the market here really soon. We're expecting to have our 100% phosphine product called UPhos available before the end of the year in limited locations. And then we're going to be introducing UPhos 2%, which is our 2% phosphine, 98% CO2 version. We'll be not launching that next year. So we will have not just the solid phosphine products, aluminum, magnesium phosphide, but we'll also have cylinderized fumigant options also available starting later this year and then moving into next year, which is pretty exciting for us. We're really excited to kind of move into that cylinderized phosphine market. It's something that we've been working on for a while, and I'm pretty excited that we're right on the edge of getting it done. You know, and it's really nice that we have this really wide variety of fumigants that are available to the industry. But because we have this wide variety of fumigants that are out on the market, what are some of the differences between these fumigants? Because I know, you know, as methyl bromide was being phased out, there was a lot of talk on trying to find just an apples to apples replacement for methyl bromide. But none of the fumigants that we're currently using really work as an apples to apples replacement for methyl bromide. And I think that's some of the reason why it's still being used today is because we haven't really found a way to replace it completely across the board. So with that being said, what do you think some of the main differences are between these fumigants that we're using today?
Well, I started, like I said, in 1990, there was a group, they always had every year, a methyl bromide alternatives convention, trying to come up with alternatives to methyl bromide. And really there has not been a whole swap of being able to find a fumigant that fits methyl bromide's capabilities, especially in the soil fumigant market and all that. But that's not something that we deal with. But you have the sulfural fluoride, which again, it was classified as a replacement for methyl bromide. It has space fumigating capacity. Dow at the time had sold it and marketed it as a precision fumigant, where in the old days for methyl bromide, we would shoot a facility at a pound, pound and a half per thousand cubic feet, make sure we had a good seal on it. And it didn't matter anything roughly over 70 degrees. If you held your concentration, you were going to kill all stages. With the sulfuric fluoride, it was more, again, they marketed it as a precision fumigant. So it was based, your dosage was based on insect type as well as temperature. So if you were at 70 degrees trying to kill red and confused flower beetles, let's say you might use 5,000 pounds. If you were at 80 degrees, you would be able to reduce that and maybe use 4,000 pounds. And of course, this is, I'm just using that as comparison. That's not really the numbers, but so you could adjust it. You could adjust your fumigation on dosage based on your insect as well as your temperature range and your time constraints. So sulfuric fluoride offered that, I'll say, alternative to methyl bromide. It was more expensive than methyl bromide. Methyl bromide had been around for so long, it was really cheap. And it moved into being used for a space fumigant as well as a commodity fumigant. The limits on sulfuric fluoride were that not all food products were on the label. So that initially created a problem for the industry because they were like, well, with methyl bromide, we pretty much could fumigate all food products. There was a few things that you couldn't. But so with sulfuric fluoride, it had somewhat of a limited label. However, the work around that was, you could expose some food commodities as incidental contact or incidental fumigation.
Right.
With that being said, what that was for people that don't know was, let's say that I had a customer call and I got a truckload of cookies that I need to fumigate. Well, I can't fumigate that truckload of cookies because cookies are not on the Profume label. So that limited, I would really probably have to use a phosphine product, whether it be solid or cylinderized. Now, if I had a warehouse that I'm fumigating and it happened to have some cookies in there, and the way the label reads is if it's not practical to remove those food products that are not on the label, they can be left in there and have incidental contact. So like I said, if you had some cookies that were in a warehouse that were, you're fumigating, say a bunch of rice and everything like that as well, you could leave those in there. You just couldn't specifically target a food commodity that was not on the label. So
right.
That was the workaround for sulfuric fluoride. A lot of fumigation companies, and one of the fumigation companies that I had worked for in the past, were adamant about removing anything out of that fumigated space that was not on the label. They would not fumigate a facility if it had anything in there that was not on the label. They did not abide by or believe in that incidental contact. I think as time has changed, all the fumigation companies have realized that is it's on the label. The incidental contact is on the label. So they've pretty much moved away from forcing customers to pull stuff out. And then you've got your phosphine products. The drawback to phosphine, whether it's cylinderized or solid, for a space fumigation, is that phosphine can be corrosive to precious metals. So if you've got a lot of computers or telephone systems or electric motors or anything like that, say in a food plant, it's not really practical to fumigate that space with phosphine. Now, can it be done? Yes, it has been done many times through the years. A lot of factors come into play on that as far as corrosiveness. It depends on the humidity, temperature, exposure time along those lines. But typically, most places will not fumigate a space with equipment in it using phosphine. Now, phosphine is used in storage, storage bins, silos, flour bins, rail cars, box cars, truck trailers, anything along those lines that have commodities and everything. So that's not an issue. So you've got the phosphine. Phosphine is typically, I always tell people, phosphine is typically used for commodity fumigation, meaning that you've got a structure that's holding that commodity and doesn't have a lot of wiring or equipment or anything along those lines. Now, the caveat to that is that you have a spot fumigant, mag toxin, that is used in facilities to do a quote unquote spot fumigation of equipment. So instead of doing the whole facility, you put your mag toxin in that equipment. You don't really seal it up because it's releasing a large amount of phosphine that's going to kill the insects present. Don't know if it just depends on your exposure time and how well it's sealed to see if you get the eggs, but it's pretty much used for all viable insects, larvae, adults, or immatures, but really not for eggs. So the spot fumigant can be used in equipment. But again, if it comes to a large space fumigation, pretty much right now, I think sulfuric fluoride is the one that would be used.
Yeah, and I also think that, you know, when you do spot fumigations, it's always a good idea, in my opinion, to also apply that along with a space fogging treatment in the areas where the fumigant's not present. I always think that that's a pretty good idea to kill adult and larval stages that come into contact with the fogging concentrate that maybe aren't inside the area that's being fumigated. So, of course, that's not a replacement for a whole facility fumigation. A whole facility fumigation is always going to be the most ideal choice because that's going to kill all life stages throughout the entire facility. But if you do need to maybe save a little time, save a little money, you can do these spot fumigations in conjunction with some space fogging, which is a really good idea. And I think that's a pretty common practice in our industry.
Yeah, and I agree. The space fogging agent of choice, at least in my eyes, would be a Vapona product, a DDVP. It's not a fumigant, but has very good, it's very, moves relatively easy through a facility. You don't get any penetrating qualities, but higher vapor pressure, it moves around quite a bit, and we'll get all active stages. You know, I think that done with a spot fumigation is the best thing that you can do if you cannot do a full-fledged, full space fumigation. But again, you're not touching any of the eggs or getting any penetrating qualities from that DDVP product.
Right.
That's the way to go. And that's the way that I always would tell my customers, you know, that's what you need to do to get the best bang for the buck. And in some respects, when we started to lose methyl bromide, the flour milling industry started moving toward more space foggings using DDVP products to offset that loss of methyl bromide. And it's less downtime and it's less impactful to the business. But the bottom line is making sure that whatever service you're providing is that you're giving them the best alternative to meet their needs.
Yeah, and the nice thing about you know, the wide variety of fumigants that we have is that there is a wide variety, and they all kind of have you know, their pros and their cons, and they all have their niches that they work very well in. And so that, and that's another reason why it's so important that we keep all of these different fumigant molecules alive and well in the industry, you know, because it, having that variety helps us a lot. You know, I know methylbromide was kind of a one and done back in the day, but with it going away, it's so important that we keep this variety of fumigants on the market. Now I'm going to change gears a little bit here and we'll start talking about some of the things that we need to do to prepare to use some of these fumigants in different environments, which, you know, initially we start with an inspection. Usually, you know, we go in, we talk to the customer or the facility or property manager, whatever the case is. We start having a discussion with them about what their needs are. And then we follow that up with an inspection to, you know, determine that they have an insect infestation. We make a choice on what we want to do, but we also have to inspect the facility, not just to prove that a fumigation is needed, but also we have to inspect to prepare for a fumigation. It's kind of two different things to look for in that. You know, when you're inspecting for insects, you're going to be looking at the facility different than when you're inspecting it to prepare it for a fumigation. So when you're inspecting to prepare for a fumigation, what are some of the things that we should be looking for?
Well, along those lines too, when I go in to see a customer, a potential customer, you want to make sure that they might think that they need a quote unquote fumigation, and they might not at all. They might have an area that has a problem, let's say, that's limited to a certain section of the warehouse. Or whatever, they could potentially pull that product out of the facility and put it into a trailer and fumigate it, and then at the same time do a space fogging that we talked about. So going in initially, you want to make sure that you're going in and assessing the whole big picture. Again, the customer might say, yeah, I want to fumigate. Well, you want to give them all the options that are available, and a full-fledged general, we call it general fumigation, might not be in place. But if it is, when you're going in there and looking at that facility, you need to make sure that first of all, it is able to be fumigated, meaning can it be properly sealed to hold the fumigant safely and effectively. If it's in a area that most food plants and flour mills and all that usually have a large area that's under their control, and quote unquote neighbors aren't necessarily a problem, but you need to look to make sure that facility is viable to be able to hold the fumigant safely and effectively. Because if you've got a close by neighbor and the building is going to leak, fumigants are hard to hold on to. So if the building's going to leak, you can't have a adjoining business or area that could potentially be exposed to the fumigant while it's being applied, or while it's under fumigation, if there's leakage that's going to occur, or during the aeration process. So you need to evaluate to make sure, can I safely apply fumigants to this facility, hold it for the specific time that I need, and then aerate it safely without exposing bystanders or other businesses. So that's the number one thing. The other is, a lot of times you'll go into facilities. I've been into facilities and they'll say, well, I want to fumigate this area and I don't want to do the whole facility. And two things on that. First of all, you have to see, okay, can I isolate? Does it make sense to be able to isolate this area to be able to fumigate that? Can I seal it, break it off, make sure that everything's going to hold in that area? Is that possible? Is it possible that just doing the one area doesn't make sense because you've got other areas that are connected to the building that potentially could be infested or have a problem? So you really need to do the whole facility. So that's something that you need to look at. And then the other thing is, a lot of times I've been in facilities that say, well, I want to fumigate processing area A, but I cannot shut down processing area B while I'm fumigating, meaning they want to keep people in the building and operating and all that. Well, that's just not, it's not possible. I'd say it's not possible. It has been done. It's not a good practice to do because you have to monitor the entire area. And generally most fumigation companies will not even attempt that.
Yeah, it's doable, but it's certainly, there's a lot of extra labor involved. I don't think I ever would suggest it unless there's just like really, really specific reasons for it.
Yeah, I've done it. I've, without naming the facility, I've done a facility that had a certain area they wanted to fumigate and they could not shut down the other processing areas. But they did shut down what we called a buffer zone area that was an area that surrounded the fumigation area that we isolated and blocked it off. No one was allowed in there. And we continuously monitored throughout the fumigation to ensure there was no leakage into that buffer zone area that could potentially go into the processing areas.
Yeah. And I also want to say real quick, too, if anybody's thinking about doing that, I cannot suggest enough how important it is to reach out to the fumigant manufacturer just to get their input prior to any kind of fumigation being conducted in that capacity. There's a lot of scenarios and situations where you may think that that's doable or possible, and it's not. And you just can't take chances with fumigants. They're too deadly. There's too many things that can go wrong if you use them improperly. So if anybody's entertaining using fumigants in that capacity, please reach out to the manufacturers of that fumigant and have a conversation with them during the planning process. And if they tell you it can't be done, don't do it. The manufacturers know. Trust me.
Yes. And you can, the thing is, if you feel uncomfortable, then that probably is answering your question.
But yeah.
You can also bring in that manufacturer in as part of your planning or meeting with the customer to get the manufacturer to back you up to say, no, this isn't a good idea.
Absolutely.
I did a facility years ago, a meat processing plant, and we were doing an area that for rodents, and they had an area, and then there was a buffer zone area, but then connected to the building was going to be completely evacuated and empty, but connected to the building a long ways away was like $7 million worth of beef in coolers and refrigerated areas. And I told the customer at the time, they said, well, you know, you've got a 400 or 500 foot buffer zone that, you know, to the meat. And I said, absolutely not going to fumigate it. And they said, why? And I said, because if you don't take that meat out, I said, I'm not going to have a $7 million going away barbecue for myself because that fumigant's going to get there. And they said, no way. They said, it's too far away. There's nothing. There's no pipes running over to there and all that. I said, it will get there. I said, and the fumigant being used at the time was sulfuric fluoride, and methyl bromide was even worse moving to cooler areas. So they emptied the coolers. And sure enough, when we were doing the fumigation, we found fumigant in those refrigerated areas that would have come in contact with that meat, which therefore would be considered not on the label, so that beef would have had to been destroyed. So I'll put it this way. When you think that fumigant can't get there, you better really think. It moves greatly, and it doesn't take much to get over to an area to cause people to have to be evacuated or come in contact with a product that's not on the label, and then you're opening up a whole can of worms. So
yeah, and when you're inspecting these areas, you have to assume that the fumigant's going to get into these areas until you can prove that it doesn't.
Correct. And the problem with cooler areas is once it gets into a freezer or refrigerated space, it's very difficult to get out. And then the problem is if you've got product in there that it should not have come in contact with, that's one thing. But when you go to aerate it, the way that you have to aerate it is to blow fresh air in, which is going to change the temperature of the space and could potentially spoil the product that was in there. So it, like I said, the best plan is to not fumigate and occupy anywhere that has a shared occupied space. It's just, it can be done, but I would highly recommend against it.
Right. Yeah. So one other thing I wanted to ask you too is, you know, we talk a lot in our industry about the things that we need to do to prepare for a fumigation as the fumigators, you know, inspection, you know, preparing the facility, tape and seal, things like that. But something that we don't talk a lot about are the things that the customer or the person responsible for the fumigated space, some of the things are that they need to do or that they should know about preparing their facility to be fumigated, because it's not all on the fumigator's responsibility to prepare the fumigation. Some of that responsibility lies with the person responsible for the location. So what are some of the things that they need to know about preparing their facility for fumigation?
Well, pre-planning for the fumigation, when you go to talk to the customer, one thing that you need to have in hand is your FMP, fumigation management plan. The fumigation management plan that I've used for years, I had developed years ago, and it's about a 6 to 8 page document that goes way above what the label requirements are for a fumigation management plan. But it outlines the responsibilities of the fumigation company as well as the customer. And that document you should have there so you can go line item by line item with the customer. Some of the things that they need to plan for is making sure that they have all the product that they need out of that facility. You don't want to start to fumigate a facility and then say, oh, I forgot. I need to get a truckload of, you know, XYZ out of the building. Too late. Once the fumigation starts, unless you aerate it and completely evacuate the fumigant, you're not going to be able to get in there. So you need to make sure that they've got everything out that they need out prior to the fumigation. They need to be as part of that fumigation plan meeting that you're having with them. You should give them a label and they should review, and you should point out anything and everything that needs to come out of that facility before the fumigation, such as medicinals, tobacco, cigarettes, stuff along those lines that are not on the label, that you cannot have quote unquote incidental contact with. There's items that, you know, you can't fumigate, so you need to remove them, which would include plants, obviously any pets. Really pet wise, you shouldn't have that in a food plant. You'd be surprised at what you'll see sometimes. Yeah. You need to make sure that everything on the label that says it can't be fumigated is removed. Also, the customer needs to make plans for whether the fumigation company is going to provide it or the customer is going to provide it, having guard duty available to make sure that the facility is guarded during the fumigation and aeration time. The other thing is, and this is really your pre-planning, and when you're looking at the facility, making sure that all doors and potential entryways can be secured for improper entry. I did a food facility in Texas one time, and did a walk around, and I told the quality control manager, I said, you know, you need to make sure that all your doors are lockable and all that. And they sort of scoffed at me and they said, this is a food plant, Bob. All our doors have to be locked because it's for security reasons. I said, okay. So I went through and I found 3 doors that were not lockable.
Yeah.
That whether it was on the roof. Okay. Now a lot of people would think, well, you know, how do you get onto the roof? Well, if there's ladders, which they had, ladders that access the roof, that door still needs to be lockable.
Yep.
Because somebody can get, if you can get into the facility by walking in, they have to be securable. You need to make sure that you have for your security that you have restroom facilities available outside of the fumigated space, such as a portalette or port-a-john, whatever you want to call it, because people cannot enter the facility, whether the office space is fumigated or not. You can't enter a fumigated space to use the facilities. So that's just a few of the things you need to make sure that if you're doing a large facility, that you've marked all of the aeration devices that you're going to use, whether there's overhead vents or roof fans, that you know exactly what you can and cannot turn on to help aerate that to remove the fumigant. You need to make sure that they have any dock doors that, especially if you're doing a warehouse, if you've got 100 dock doors that you're going to have to seal and you go to aerate, if you've got 100 dock doors blocked by trucks, that's not going to do you any good. You're going to have some of those doors open to allow fresh air to move in and out of the fumigated space. So all of this has to be communicated with the customer prior to release of the fumigant. They also need to, there's a whole long list of things, but these are some of the, probably, I won't say they're just the key ones, but some of the key ones. It's not all inclusive. Yeah. One of the things they need to make sure is that they've communicated with their staff, including people that have been on vacation, that the facility will be treated on such and such a day. No one will be allowed on the property. Communicate with vendors to make sure that nobody's showing up to pick up a load. I can't tell you how many times I've had an outside cleaning crew show up. And you know, what are you doing? Well, we're the janitors. We're coming to clean the offices. No, you're not. And you have to be very careful because a lot of these companies have keys and access to the facility. So it has to be communicated to everybody that the facility is going to be shut down for a period of time and that no one will have access. I've had people show up. I'm sure you have too. I've had people show up, the manager show up or the manager's assistant. Oh, I forgot something in my desk. Can I just hold my breath and run into my office?
Yep.
You know,
no, you can't.
Yeah. So, you know, that's just a few of the things that need to be communicated. You know, the other part is prior to the fumigation is you need to make sure that you've arranged where the fumigant can be stored temporarily prior to release, because you're going to have, you typically have it if you're doing a large space fumigation, you're shipping the fumigant in. So you need to make sure that fumigant is stored safely and properly prior to release. And then, you know, obviously make the arrangements to have the empty cylinders or empty or if full cylinders that were brought in for ad gas removed and shipped out quickly after the job. So, like I said, there's the fumigation management plan that I use is probably 6 to 8 pages long, and there's probably 4 full pages of checkoff items and things that I cover with the customer prior to the fumigation. And then they get a copy of that the label and that fumigation management plan as well. But it doesn't matter how many times you've done a place. I've had people that I fumigated. I fumigated one facility 50 times in my career. And still every once in a while, somebody would show up and want in, or there would be equipment that was left on during the fumigation or prior to release of the gas that we had to track down that was running that could potentially exhaust fumigant out of the facility. And like I said, there's a lot to it. I had one facility that, you know, we covered with the customer. They had heaters. They had gas heaters. This is when we were using methyl bromide. And they forgot to turn off their timers and did not turn the gas off. And so during the fumigation, the propane heaters kicked on, reacted with the methyl bromide resulting in the formation of bromic acid, which etched a lot of equipment, put rust on it, and really did some damage. And they had forgotten, as part of their fumigation management plan, to cut that off, to turn those timers off. So what we eventually did was just told them, you know what, we're not going to mess with that. Just turn the gas off.
Right.
And your timers won't even, if it doesn't matter. But so there's a laundry list of things that have to be done. That's probably some of the top ones that come to mind. But again, it's not all inclusive.
Yeah. And there's no cookie cutter either. Every facility is different. So every facility is going to have, I mean, some of it's always going to be the same, no matter what facility type you're doing, but you need to go inside each facility and create an individual list for that particular facility, because they're all a little bit different. I mean, and you can have grain bins that are different. And one other thing that I wanted to mention too, that I know, you know, because you know, I've been out with you during inspections, so I know you know this because we've had this discussion before, but I think it's important to mention, when you're doing your initial inspection for a fumigation, you're going to find some areas occasionally that could be permanently sealed off or should be permanently sealed off, you know, gaps in roof, wall joints, you know, things of that nature. Making sure that the customer gets all of those permanently sealed prior to fumigation is another thing that's going to be key.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's funny because one of my pet peeves was I would go into a facility and there would be a pipe running through an outside wall, and there was a gap where you could see daylight, and there was always tape marks up there or glue marks up there where it was taped every fumigation. And I was like, you know what? Why are we doing that? With the customer, I said, please, first of all, for integrated pest management, you should seal that pipe. It's not good for you. It's allowing potential insect entry. It's potential insect harborage in that gap there. Please seal it with an appropriate sealing material, whether it be latex caulk or something, or concrete. And that's a lot of the things that I would do for my customers. I say, you know, if you guys can't do it, if you'll either provide the sealing material that you want or approve what you want to use. Now, I wouldn't do concrete work, but basically it was just caulking. I would seal it during the process. And a lot of my colleagues said, well, why are you doing that? You're doing something for the customer that you should charge them for. And I said, no, I said, I'm my goal is to keep this customer long term. I'm helping them on their IPM program. It's showing that we're adding value to our business, and it's saving us labor every time we have to go in and seal that.
Yes, sir.
So it was a win-win, and the customer appreciated it. And I had several customers that used to chuckle. They said, Bob, I've been working at this plant for 30 years. And they said, you know, every nook and cranny, you know, where holes are that I've never seen. And I said, that's what I'm here for. I said, you're paying me to make sure that everything's taken care of. And if you don't seal all those, you know, if you don't seal all those nook and crannies, are you going to lose that much gas? Probably not. But you're leaving a harborage point. For one thing, if you've got insects in that area and it's leaking and fresh air is available just to that area, you're leaving a potential insect reinfestation source. You know, you could have got a great kill everywhere else, but right up in that pipe area, you had enough fresh air coming in that you didn't kill the eggs. So there's your point to reinfest. So again, I think it's a win-win. If you seal up everything that you can, it's a one and done. But then no matter how many times you fumigate a facility, you have to walk that facility every single time to make sure that there's not a new piece of equipment. There's not a hole cut in the wall. There's not a new vent put in. You know, that's the prior to sealing and everything, you do that. But then also, when you're going to fumigate before you release, you have to check every single space to make sure that there's no one in the building. You know, and one of our colleagues had told the story. I've never had it happen. I mean, but said he was walking the facility, getting ready to fumigate it, and walked to a back section of a warehouse. And sure enough, on top of this pallet of product was a gentleman taking a nap.
Yeah.
And, you know, he would have taken a permanent nap if they hadn't walked through and found him. So, you know, walk in the facility prior to fumigation to make sure you've got everything sealed is one thing, but also as part of your fumigation management plan is walking the facility to make sure that everybody's out of the facility prior to fumigant release.
Yeah, it's so important. Well, hey, Bob, I only have one more question for you. And I always ask some kind of a version of this question every time that I talk to guests on the podcast. But this version has to do with kind of what we've been talking about today. What kind of advice would you give a new fumigator, somebody that's brand new on the job, about preparing for a fumigation?
Well, I said this in my earlier podcast. I said, first of all, my advice is find another business. Why are you getting into this business? But I say that kiddingly because it's a great industry. It's, you know, like I said, I've been in it 33 plus years and love it. But the good thing about this industry, it's a tight-knit industry. Unfortunately, we're losing a lot of our experts that are retiring or moving on. So we need to make sure that we're training the new fumigators coming in. And what I would say to someone that's coming in is to latch on to a fumigator that has been around for a long time with your company or in the industry. Watch and learn from them. But with that being said, just because they're doing it doesn't mean it's correct.
Right.
They could have been trained, you know, by someone that wasn't doing something properly or whatever. They don't know that they're doing it improperly. The label is the law. That's the first thing. But make sure that you're looking at the big picture, making sure that everything is done safely and effectively and ethically to make sure that you're providing that best service. And don't be afraid to ask questions. Just because something's done a certain way doesn't mean that's the only way to do it. There might be a better alternative and nobody's seen it. But it might be the reason why it's done a certain way is the person can explain to you, well, we tried it this other way, and this is the best way because XYZ.
Right.
So just have your eyes open, learn as much as you can, but don't accept doing something as maybe necessarily that's the only way to do it. And it might not be the only way. Might not be the most effective way, and it might not be the safest way or the legal way. So again, you know, try to look at everything from a big picture and learn as much as possible and ask questions.
Yeah, and when in doubt, reach out to the manufacturer of the fumigant and read the label.
Yep, the label is the law, and I cannot stress to you how many when I've been in training situations when I've talked to long term fumigators and I say something and they go, well, that's not right. I said, yeah, it is. Here's pull out the label and show them, and they haven't read the label in years or overlooked it. And sometimes you need to bring in the manufacturer. The manufacturer will give you the skinny on it and say, yep, this is the way it should be done. So, you know, when in doubt, ask questions. Don't take chances. You don't get a second chance if you make a huge mistake.
Absolutely. Well, Bob, thanks so much again for agreeing to join me on another episode of the podcast. It's really appreciated, buddy.
No problem. I always enjoy talking about the industry. Great industry. And I work for Degish, but I'm glad that we are being a good steward of the industry. And especially with these podcasts, it helps educate, you know, up and coming fumigators and or existing fumigators. It's, you know, an ongoing educational opportunity.
That's the goal. All right. Well, thanks, Bob. I appreciate it. You have a good day, buddy.
You too. Take care.
I want to thank Bob for giving us some insight into preparing for a fumigation. Knowing which fumigant to select, when and how to use it, and how to prepare a bid are key factors to consider at the beginning stages of any fumigation. On the next episode of Degish America Presents, we're going to be talking in greater detail on fumigant selection and how it pertains to the different types of facilities you might fumigate. And remember, if you have any question you'd like for us to answer, feel free to email us at podcast@degishamerica.com. You can also find us on our website at degishamerica.com or on all of the main social media outlets. And so, until next time, I'm Ben Harrell, and I hope you have a safe and terrific day.